So first of all, today's shiur is in the memory of Pearl Hochhauser, Pearl Bas Shlomo Zev. And it's her yahrzeit is the 16th of Adar by Albi and A.B. Hochhauser. And it's quite possible that she used to daven in my father's shul. That's my recollection. And the shiur should be in Eloi for her neshama. Also, both of my grandmothers had the yahrzeit was yesterday on Shushan Purim. Not the same year, but both of them. And also my great-grandfather has his yahrzeit today. So the learning Torah should be for all of the people that we mentioned. And everyone else should have refuah shleima. And everyone else shouldn't get sick. I think it was very kind of all the people to make sure not to come so that we have under 100 people here this morning. I think that was very thoughtful of them. Also, the minyan I went to this morning, people were thoughtful. I mean, we have a minyan, but they were thoughtful, make sure that we don't have too many people. So it's amazing how much chesed people do during this time in New Rochelle, where a lot of people are under quarantine, including some relatives of mine. I mean, what Chabad did there, going house to house and reading on outside on the porches to people's houses was absolutely phenomenal. And really, really just amazing. So we need to recall our capacity of kindness during this time as well. And I'm sure that God will look kindly upon those things. But we have a little bit of a problem within this week's parasha. No, not a huge problem, a little problem. And that is that I prepared it before Purim. So how can I possibly prepare for a shiur before Purim without having Purim as part of the shiur? So somehow, this is going to come back to Purim issues, so I just want you to realize that that's perfectly normal. And it was good that somebody emailed me last night saying there's no shiur tomorrow, because I thought I sent out the sources earlier in the week, and then I realized I only sent them to myself earlier in the week, and I'll say it again, this was done before Purim or on Purim, so I have I'm not going to say an excuse, but certainly an explanation. So let's begin. So of course, it's quite appropriate that we have, towards the end of the parsha, somebody wearing a mask. Not that he was necessarily afraid that what they had he was going to catch or what he had he was going to give. But let's begin. In Perek Lamed Daled, we're told, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Ketov lecha drima ele, ki al pi drima ele karati t'chabrit ve'et Yisrael." So, first of all, we know that God has just told Moshe to write something. And what it is that he's telling him to write is probably pretty important, although we're going to completely ignore it for the moment. And Moshe was there for 40 days and 40 nights. Lechem lo achal, umayim lo shata. So to make this more complicated, some of us recall that Rashi is of the opinion there was actually three sets of 40 days and 40 nights. There was the first one that ended with the Cheda Egel, then there was the second one, which was of praying, and then there was the third one, which was the one when Moshe goes up on Rosh Chodesh Elul and comes down in Yom Kippur, and therefore establishing Yom Kippur as a day of forgiveness, and that's when he comes down with the second Luchot. V'yichtov ala Luchot et Devrei Habrit aseret Dvarim. And he wrote on the Luchot the items of the covenant, 10 things. He bereded Moshe mehar Sinai, ushnei luchot ha'idut biyad Moshe, beredeto minahar. When Moshe comes down and he has this testimony, tablets of testimony in his hands, u'moshe lo yada ki karan or panav bidabro ito. And Moshe didn't know that his face or his skin was glowing, or the skin of his face was glowing from when God spoke to him. Although we should note, it doesn't tell us which time. So, I mean, presumably this is the second time. Was Moshe's face already glowing when he came down the first time? Which means, at which point does Moshe undergo this transformation? So we'll see in a moment that that's subject to a difference of opinion, or there's machloket on that point. Vayar Aharon v'chol b'nei Yisrael et Moshe v'nei karan or panav. And Aaron and the rest saw that Moshe's face is aglow, and they were afraid of coming near him. Vayikra ilav Moshe vayishuv ilav Aaron v'chol nisi'im be'eda. And Moshe called to them, to all of the people of the camp. Vayidaber Moshe aleihem, and Moshe spoke to them. V'achrechein nigshu kol b'nei Yisrael, and afterwards others approached, v'etzavim et kol shediber Hashem ito b'har Sinai, and he commanded them regarding everything that God said on Mount Sinai. Of course, part of the background to all this is, what else did God say? What is the content? Is this only a Aseret Dibrot, or is there far more? Obviously, or not obviously, in our tradition, the content was far more than just the Ten Commandments. When Moshe finished speaking with them, he put on his face some type of a mask. And when Moshe would go and approach God, as it were, to speak to God, or had God speak to him, then he would take the mask off. But when he would go out, and then ongoing revelation telling God, the people, what God has commanded, then Moshe would put the mask back on. So as far as where the mask came from, or for that matter, we can ask another question. If presumably this is the second time, so then why now? Why not when Moshe goes up the first time? Why not during the Aseret Dibrot themselves? Which means, why at some point along the way did this glow begin, and why at some point along the way is it that, or at which point during the way? During Shmot Rabbah, we find three opinions. Umoshe lo yada ki karan or panav, mehecha nata Moshe karnei ha-hod. From where did Moshe get this karnei ha-hod? From where did he get this? So just notice something, that it used a new term over here. In the Chumash itself, what did it call it? Ki karan or panav. And over here in the Midrash, it calls it karnei ha-hod. So what is hod? So hod, maybe the best way to translate that is glory. Maybe. I don't know. If you have a better translation, you'll tell me. Glory. So, Mehichon Natal Moshe Karnei Ahod. From where did Moshe obtain this glow upon him? Shenemar V'yiha Ba'avor Kvodi. And again, it uses the word kavod. So it seems to be that the word kavod and the word hod over here are somewhat interchangeable. Rabbi Brachia Kohen B'Shem Rabbi Shmuel Amar Haluchot Hayarkan Shisha Tfachim V'Rachavan Shisha V'Yemoshe Ochez B'Tfchayim U'Shchina B'Tfchayim V'Tfchayim Be'Emtza U'Misham Natal Moshe Karnei Ahod. So what it seems to be saying is that it gives us the dimensions, and it says that Moshe was carrying part of it in his hand, and God was holding part of it, and then there was this part in the middle, and that part in the middle seems to be what then spills over. So without getting overly technical, what it seems to be telling us is that the glow upon Moshe is coming from the luchot themselves, which means somehow the luchot, or carrying the luchot, are what gives Moshe this glow. And then it says, Umisham nata Moshe karnei ha-hod. And again, it uses the phrase ha-hod. From there, Moshe gets this glow of glory, as it were. Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachman, Rishem Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Omer, Anshi Akotev, on the very first line, maybe I skipped that, I don't know why, Umoshe dat karan opernav, Mehecha nata Moshe karnev, Rabbanan amre min hama'ara. Sorry, that was the first opinion. The rabbi said that it took place from the cave. I'm sorry. And that, I just skipped to the verse, V'yaba avor kvodi. That's when Moshe says to God, can I see your glory? And he says, you can and you can't, or the back or the front, and go by the cleft of the rock, and then God passes by, and something happens. So it says, okay, what is it that happened that the somehow God passing by in whatever took place over there, that's what gave Moshe this glow upon him. So the first opinion is that when Moshe asks, now at which point does he ask this? He's asking this during the point that he's praying for the forgiveness, the people should be forgiven and God should be amongst the people, and that, you know, can I see your glory? And at that point, you know, there is this, I'll pass by the rock, and that somehow is what then projects upon Moshe and creates this glow. So again, I'll say that was opinion number one. The second opinion was that the holding of the luchot themselves is what creates it. And the third opinion is a little strange, and I'm not sure how well this is explained. Again, the third opinion is, Anshi Akotev Bikulmus, and as Moshe was writing with the quill, Nishtayer Kama, and a little bit of the ink stayed upon, the Viru Al Rosho, and without paying attention, he sort of wiped it by on his head, Umimenu Naselo Karnei Ahod, and that's where the carnelian it came from, namely from the leftover ink, which was in the quill. He did not know this. So it's interesting that the last two opinions is, one is being in contact with the luchot themselves, and the second was in contact with the quill which would write. Of course, part of what is perplexing to us is what exactly is being written at this particular juncture with the quill, which means, isn't it the luchot which are being written, I would presume, with a hammer and with a chisel, even though we should note that in Pasuk Kaf Ched above it says that Moshe was there for 40 days and 40 nights. V'yichtov al haluchot. He wrote on the luchot, but again, presumably writing on the luchot is, I mean, the word writing is because letters come out, but the word writing there is not necessarily with the quill. One would say that that was with the hammer and the chisel. Although it is interesting that in the before that even, v'yomer shema Moshe k'tov l'chat d'vrim ha'eleh, write these things, and are these things, which means essentially is the writing in Pasuk Kaf Zayin the same as the writing in Pasuk Kaf Chet? And is there any kind of Torah Shebichtav which is being written now, or is there any sort of Torah Shebaal Peh? Because if Moshe is also writing at least some, okay, let me back up in the middle of that sentence and try to explain something. There is a difference of opinion whether the way that the Torah was given to us was Moshe wrote the entire Torah at the end of the 40 years, or Moshe wrote what's called in the Gemara Megillah Megillah, that he wrote section by section. If I'm not, the Gemara in Gittin and Daf Samach, page 60, discusses this. If I'm not mistaken, the argument there is actually between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So it's interesting that Reish Lakish was the one over here who had said that there was like some leftover ink in the quill, so one would now have to go back and check who said what in that argument over there, and did in fact Moshe write part of the Torah Shebichtav already at this point, and does the writing of the Torah Shebichtav produce this? Is it the holding of the Luchot, or is it the interaction with the glory of God? But again, if it's the interaction with the glory of God, so Moshe has had various interactions before. He had interaction at the Sneh, every time God speaks to him, and Moshe goes up the first time. So why is it at this particular time? So again, it would seem to be that by the Sneh, this doesn't happen. I don't know how they did this in the movie. Maybe by the movie, it does happen by the Sneh. The Ten Commandments, I don't remember when they, maybe it is then. Is it that it doesn't happen then? It may happen during the medium 40 days, that's the point of this whole thing with the rock, presumably, or when he gets invited back the second time, then he carries down the new luchot, but either way, we're somewhat perplexed. Why at this point does this take place? I will try to answer that before we finish today. The Targum Unculus explaining Karan or Panav. So, what pasuk was that? That was Lamed Dalet Kaftet. Moshe lo yada ki karan or panav. So the Targum there translates this as ziv yikra. So what is ziv yikra? Yeah, ziv yikra. It is a glow. Now, what does the word yakar or yikra mean over here? It would mean of kavod. It would mean this glow of kavod. So just to understand why I understand it that way. If you look at Pasuk Lamed Gimel Kaf Bet, and you will all note what this Pasuk is talking about and why it's significant, Vaya ba'avur kvodi v'samticha b'nikrat hatzur v'sakoti kapai alecha ad avri. That when, I pass by, but you kvodi, my kavod, God's glory is going to pass by, and then I will put it upon you, as I pass by. Over here, the Targum translates, v'yab avur kvodi, again in Lamed Gimel Kaf Bet, v'yab ma'abar yikari. So therefore, as my glory passes by, and he uses the word yikra as the translation of kavod, so therefore, by our verse that Moshe has this ziv yikra, it seems to me that on a linguistic level, what Unculus is doing is he's connecting it to that experience by passing by specifically at the rock or the cleft in the rock. And the reason why he's doing that is because that's the time that God says, and this will be upon you. which means this will be, my glory will be upon you at that point. So that is the only hint that we have at any of these points that some kind of personal transformation took place in Moshe. And I'm saying that it's not like sort of like a random point. I think it's very, very sharp interpretation over here. And of course, whenever Unkelus deviates from a literal translation to something which is slightly different, one has to be careful. And over here, then what was the simple methodology over here? Taking a look, when over here, it's not literal. Over here, would it say Quran or Panav? And he uses it Yikra, so the word Kavod. So where did that come from? Well, that came from Bavor Kvodi, and therefore what he's doing is he's connecting those two verses as one of the opinions that we saw in the Midrash, the first opinion, that when did Moshe's face start to glow? When this experience took place, when God passes by and the cleft of the rock. Rashi, by the way, goes in that direction as well in source number 6. V'yihi beredet Moshe, kishevi luchot achronot b'yom ha-kippurim. So again, Rashi wants to make sure that we're not confused. This is the second time he comes down. And what date is this? This is Yom Kippur. Ki karan, lashon karnayim, sha'or mavhiku b'leit kamin karen. So Rashi actually suggests that the glow coming out is like a ray of light. A ray of light is coming off of him. The question is, like, what exactly does he mean by that? Rashi in other places will tell us that it could actually look like the sun or like horns. I know that you don't want to hear that, but it was like a glow of a horn which is upon him. Umehechan zacha Moshe l'garnei ahod. From where did Moshe merit this? Rabotenu Amru. Now you know right now that actually Rabotenu Amru three things. Right? There are three opinions in Rabotenu. One opinion was, of course, going backwards, was from the ink, and another was from holding the luchot, and another one was from the passing by of the rock. And Rashi says, Rabotenu amru min hama'ara. A rabbi said that, oh, this happened by walking by that cave, that rock, or so on. Shenatana kadosh baruch yado al panav shenemar v'sakoti kapi. And you see that Rashi over here quoted the same verse that I quoted before, and I did this based upon the linguistics, and he did this based upon the Torah Shebaal Peh. So I'm just trying to show you that there, you know, is a point that Unkelus attempts to make this connection on a linguistic level. Of course, there is a leap over there, because the leap is that the word Kvodi did not exist in our verse, and Unkelus put it into our verse by saying that is what's going on over here. Moshe's glow is the glory of God. The glory of God, we're told, when it transfers, and therefore Rashi goes that way as well. It's the easiest one to work into the text itself. And as I said, the one with the ink is really quite complex. Where did the ink come from? And if it's carrying the luchot himself, so why the second time and not the first time? So we are left with questions. Just regarding the ink for a moment, if anybody is particularly interested in that, I am not going to do this now, but there is a long drasha by the Beit HaLevi where he talks about this ink, that how it somehow affected Moshe. Rabbi Soloveitchik was, I don't need to say this, but he was very often very fond of his various ancestors' explanations, and he loved this Beit HaLevi. He taught it on more than one occasion, and completely convinced all of us that it was pshat in the Pasuk. And the essential approach is that the first time that Moshe came down, he came down where the original luchot was supposed to have the Torah, everything written in them. The original luchot were just written by God. And when God writes, it's like when God speaks. When God speaks it simultaneously, everything is there. When God writes, everything is there. Maybe only in our generation with be able to compress all kinds of information into little chips and so on. So just imagine then that God had given Moshe these chips, as it were, and it had all information on them. It had the Sereta Dibrot, Torah Shebichtav, and Torah Shebaal Peh. Everything was there. So Moshe's original job was simply to transfer information from God to Am Yisrael. But after they sinned with the golden calf, there was a change, and he goes upon this midrash that says all the letters went back into heaven. When he broke the luchot, the letters go back. So the Beit HaLevi, based upon certain sources, many of them Kabbalistic, said that the letters that went back were the Torah Shebaal Peh. And now the second time Moshe goes up, now God teaches him all the Torah Shebaal Peh. So now Moshe is no longer simply somebody who's carrying the information. Now Moshe is carrying the information internally on the inside. So instead of just taking a book, as it were, and giving it to them, now Moshe has become Moshe Rabbeinu. Now Moshe is going to need to teach them the Torah Shebaal Peh. So therefore, at this point, Moshe becomes transformed. So what is the indication of this transformation? Now he's holding all of that Torah Shabbat inside of him, so that's the glow which is there. So there's more to say about this, which I will come back to Bli Neder as we move on, in terms of other Gemarot, Midrashim, how this is connected. But as I said, the Beit HaLevi, which I just now did explain, and I total waste because I could have taken a whole hour to explain that, but I don't know why I did that for you in 2 minutes, but he does explain this particular point, and therefore he will answer the question why it's the second time. The Chizkuni says something along the way over here, which I am going to exaggerate and claim he says something more than he says. If you will protest and say, well, he didn't say that, so that's wonderful, then he didn't say it and I said it, that also works. In source number 7, he says, U'moshe lo yadaki karan or panav, kishnatana kadosh baruch lo et yado al pi ha-ma'ara. So he's going back to that same point, the same verse, the same Rashi and the Midrash told us, sh'yaba Moshe kidichtiva yabavur kvodi v'samticha b'nikra hatzur, and so on and so forth, v'kativa yavur Hashem al panav, u'misham zacha l'karnei ha-hod. Now you see, he asked the question, why is it by the second and not by the first luchot? The first one was very, very public, and so on. And the second ones were given secretly. Because the first ones were given with fanfare and everyone knew about it, there was this incredible miracle that took place. But what about the second ones? I mean, those were broken. So now, who said the second ones are authentic? Who said that Moshe had a relationship with the divine? So he says, oh, that's exactly why he comes down glowing the second time. Because no one else witnessed the giving of the second luchot, as it were. So therefore, the second luchot required Moshe to be transformed so that no one would be able to argue at all. There is what to respond to this. If you have any questions, there are questions to ask, but we will leave it. Because it wasn't the first luchot, that it was the Aseret HaDibrot themselves. So why should that be different? But we'll leave that. Davar Acher. And then he says, let me offer you a second interpretation. They wanted to appoint another leader in the place of Moshe. Because they wanted to replace Moshe, so therefore God's response is, you're going to replace Moshe? I mean, you don't realize that Moshe glows? Ve'ein lamid acher bimkomo. And don't put anyone in his place. So now I'll tell you what I hear him saying, which, again, you can argue that he never said, and even he can argue that he never said it. Who do they try to replace Moshe with? With the eagle. What do the eagle, what was the nature of an eagle of gold? It glows. It's very bright. So therefore they can say, oh, look, you know, this is really some kind, especially a pagan mind and idolatry, but they made something which is gold, which I'm sure the way that the sun hits that, then you have some kind of a glow upon it. So look how subtle that is. Because that's what I'm saying. I'm claiming that he says it. He says they try to replace Moshe with another leader, right? Right. We need a God who's going to go in front of us, right? And therefore let's make an eagle. So God said, oh, you want somebody, you know, who has real divinity to him, somebody who really glows, well, look at Moshe. So this is just an incredible point to realize that there's a suggestion that Moshe's glow is in order to show that Moshe is completely superior in every way from whatever it was that they had in mind to replace him with, namely with the golden calf, which glows, so now Moshe glows as well, but Moshe glows from a divine experience as opposed to idolatry. So how many people think that I'm completely reading into words that he doesn't say? So you can all decide for yourselves. But of course, you're better off agreeing with me. Because even if he doesn't say it, that's what I'm taking away. That's what I'm taking away from it. And I think at least he suggests this. Now, I want to, again, I told you that this was I'm preparing this either the day before Purim, Tanis Esther, yeah, I must have been preparing this. So look at source number 9, and then we'll go backwards. Amar Rava, Rava said, a person is obligated to drink on Purim, just as a note for anybody who wants something to do next year. And I've done this in the past. I have this collected. I don't believe I ever gave a class on this, but I collect things. The connection between Rava and Purim is very interesting. Rava is one of the main people that speak in the Gemara of Megillah and other places about Purim specifically and about wine generally. So this whole interaction in Rava and Purim and wine, and to collect all the opinions of Rava, I know that normally we don't learn like that. Normally we just learn in terms of, you know, going page by page, or learn by ideas, and you know, and we generally don't look at particular Tanoim and Amorayim and say, okay, what was his approach or his thought? There is a lot to talk about in terms of Rava specifically, and Purim, and drinking, and wine. Over here, Amarava Mechayv Inish Levsumi Bapuria, a person is obligated to drink on Purim ad delo yada, until the person doesn't know, Bein Or Haman Levarach Mordechai. So just notice for a second, when we go back to the first source in Pasuk Kaftet, Umosha lo yada. So ad delo yada, Umosha lo yada. Moshe didn't know that his face glowed, and that was indication of something which was extremely special about Moshe. And now look at the only other time it speaks about Moshe and him not and not knowing something about Moshe, and that's source number 8. When Moshe dies, Vayamat Moshe Sham Moshe, Eved Hashem, Be'eretz Moav, Al Pi Hashem, Vayikbor Oto Begai, Be'eretz Moav, Mul Beit Pa'or, V'lo Yada Ish Et Kvorato. So you have this Lo Yada regarding Moshe doesn't know that he's really that special and glowing and so on, and nobody else could possibly know where Moshe is buried. And part of the reason for this is we're told that people would pray or turn perhaps Moshe's grave into something more, into a place of pilgrimage, and expect all kinds of things. The Maharal tells us the problem with Moshe's grave is that it would have been so holy that all of our prayers would have come true. And most of us are not on a level to know what prayer, what we should be praying for. And that's the reason why it is hidden. But it's interesting that we do have these two aspects about Moshe. And I'll just add one word, Adelo Yada, that Moshe doesn't know about this upon him. And Moshe, no one knows where Moshe is buried. Yes, so the way it's understood is that that's where his flock fell. And now Moshe needs to be across it in order to create a counterpower, as it were, to be able to defeat the powers of Pa'or. If you look at the commentaries over there, they'll all go in that direction. Well, all that I say is on Purim, there is the idea of Ad Lo Yada. I'll work on that more to see why that would be connected with Purim. You're still in Purim? If you're still there, we will. I will continue with this. We actually have Haman getting a place of Lo Yada, which is in the Gemara in source number 10. It says, he peeled poor hu hagoral, and it's connected to part of what we've noted in a roundabout way. Tana, kevin shenafal poor b'chodesh Adar, when the lot fell on the month of Adar, samach simcha gdola, he became very, very happy. By the way, we will note, it does talk about Haman simcha, at least at one point in the text. We'll look at that. Amar, nafali poor b'yerach shemit bo Moshe Rabban. This is the day that Moshe, their leader, died. V'hu lo yada, so here we have Haman also getting to the point of lo yada. V'hu lo yada shebishiva ba'adar meit Moshe Rabbeinu uvishiva ba'adar nolad Moshe Rabbeinu. He doesn't know that that's where Moshe also comes to life at that point, and for us it's not considered to be such a bad date. In source 11 we're told, v'yatzah Haman b'yomahu sameach v'tov lev. That's but what takes away his simcha when he sees Mordechai takes away his simcha. Continue. Lo yada is mentioned in the Chumash in sources 12, 13, 14, and 15. I don't know if I want to read all of them. These are the lo yadas. You have lo yada have to do with drinking, which is why, and this is actually quoted without people noticing the lo yada aspect of it. They quote it just in terms of the thematic connection. Who drank to the point that, well, you have Noach drinking, but then you have Lot drinking to the point of committing some serious offenses. But to shekenet aviyam yayin b'laylahu, so you have the, you know, remember, Michai v'nish l'psume ad de lo yada, you have him drinking, v'tavoa b'chira, v'tishkavet aviyav lo yada b'shechva uv'kuma. Right, lo yada. So therefore, the lo yada, so everybody focuses, oh, look what happens when you drink too much, but it's really fascinating that they miss that the word lo yada is twice in that section, also in Pasuk Lav Hey, Lamid Hey, when the younger daughter comes, v'tishka, so over here you have two lo yadas, not knowing, and it's not, so the not knowings here lead to sexual sins, gilui arayot, you have in source 13 where Rachel takes the, she steals her father's idols, v'lo yada Yaakov ki Rachel ganban, and Yaakov doesn't know, and over here you have something connected with idolatry. So it's pretty interesting that you have gilei arayot shvichut damim. Sorry, we didn't get to shvichut damim yet. Shvichut damim is what happens in the story of Purim itself, when Rabba, in the next line of the Gemara, drinks too much, and then he shechs Reb Zera. So you have drinking too much leading to every one of our choice sins, gilei arayot, shvichut damim, vodah zarah. So it's a little perplexing how some then can still advocate, well, this is a really good thing to drink on Purim to the point of total loyadadness. I don't know how else to say this. So that gets you through source 15. Going backwards now to our cloud, to Moshe's glow upon him. So notice the way that the Gemara, and then we'll see Rashi and Tosfot, hopefully, on how they explain where Moshe's glow came from. Dorash Rav Sima'ai. B'shashik dimi Yisrael na'aseh l'nishma. When the Jews proceeded to say na'aseh before nishma, bo shishim ribo shomalchei asharet l'kol achad v'achad in Yisrael, Kashrulo shnek tarim, and they tied two crowns upon them. The phrase kishrulo tarim, they tied crowns, is also going to be used in the Gemara in Menachot when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up and he sees God tying crowns on the letters of the Torah themselves, and he asks, "What about these crowns?" And God answers, "It's about Rabbi Akiva." So keep that in mind as well. Echad keneged naaseh ve'echad keneged nishma. V'kevin shechatu Yisrael yirdu me'ah ve'esrim. Ribo Malchei HaKabbalah. So you can always ask why you had 600,000 putting two crowns, but you have 1.2 million bad angels taking away the crowns. Uperkum. Shenema v'netzlu b'nei Yisrael et ediyam mehar chorev. They lost their luster, as it were, by chorev. Amar of Chama bar Chanina, b'chorev ta'anu, that's where they got them. B'chorev perku, that's where they lost them. B'chorev ta'anu k'damrinin, b'chorev perku d'chtiv v'netzlu b'nei Yisrael, that they themselves understood that it had to be removed. The simple reading of the verse is the jewelry, that they're all wearing special holiday jewelry for the Matan Torah, and then afterwards it turns into a fast day, right, after the sin of the golden calf, then you take off the jewelry, it's just not appropriate anymore. But over here it's understanding this as a spiritual jewelry and the crowns that God gives them. Amar v'yochanan, v'kulan zachu Moshe unatlan. But what happened to all of these crowns, again, especially their spiritual crowns? So it's saying that Moshe took them. So what the Gemara over here is suggesting is that there's a theory of conservation of energy, the theory of conservation of light, and theory of conservation of spiritual energy, and therefore all of the spiritual enlightenment that all of the people experienced at Har Sinai all went to Moshe. Again, if you understood this all as jewelry, so then Moshe would have looked like a rap. With all, you know, the chains on him, but that's not what it's saying, obviously. It's saying that Moshe at that moment received something else. The Samech Moshe Yikach et Ohel, and as it says, that Moshe took the Ohel. Now, what did the Ohel have to do with anything? We'll see Rashi in a moment. Amar Reish Lakish, remember Reish Lakish, we saw him before with the quill. V'atid HaKadosh Baruch Hu lachzirim lanu, and God is going to give it back to us, which means we will one day get that luster back. Shenemar ufduyei Hashem yashuvun uvot zion berina v'simchat olam al rosham. So this glory, eternal glory, will be on their heads. Sasonu simcha yasigu v'nason yagon v'anacha simcha shemei olam al rosham. Rashi. Shnei ktarim miziv shchina. So all of the people at Matan Torah, at the first, right before the first luchot are given, everybody received this glow upon them. Meve esrim kol ha'chavrach natal keter. It's interesting. It uses the word crown. Ta'anu haktarim v'alchi mashma et edyam, and that's what it means by the jewelry which they had put on mihar chorev. It was spiritual. B'chorev perku d'mashma nam v'tzlu et edyam mihar chorev u'moshi yikach oto ade. He took this jewelry lashon achar et ohel. So he's suggesting that in the Gemara itself, over here it said Ohel, he understands it's the jewelry, or the Ohel, Lashon Bihilu Nero, he's quoting a verse in Eov, which reads in completion, Bihilu Nero Ale Roshi La'oro Elecha Elech Choshech. So it talks about Ohel being from the language of this light which shines upon them, and that's what it means that Moshe took the Ohel, Moshe took the light that was upon all of them. And then Rashi writes, V'hu haya kirun or panav. And that is the glow on Moshe's face. So therefore, Rashi understood this Gemara, that when Moshe took all of the glory from all of the people, somehow that, you know, again, theory of conservation of light, all of the people had the crowns, which was the spiritual light upon them, and now Moshe took all of it, and that's why Moshe's glowing now when he comes down the second time. Tosfot says, Shnei Ketarim shel Hod. There are two crowns of Hod. Hayu lefanecha kish... Hayu lefichach... that Moshe took, and that's why his face glowed. So Moshe glowed from double hod. Now, all of you who are already preparing what you're going to say around the bonfire on Lag BaOmer, so those of you who pay attention to each day of the Omer having a different aspect to it, of course all of you know that Lag BaOmer is hod shebahod. So Lag BaOmer has a double hod to it. So having a double hod to it, what does it represent? Well, it represents Moshe's glow. So therefore, the glow or the fires that burn on Lag BaOmer go back to the double hod over here, which Moshe has upon him. In source number 16, which is the Sefer Yismach Yisrael, it's by the second Rebbe from Alexander, Rabbi Yerachmiel Yisrael Yitzchak Danziger. His father was the Rebbe, and then later on his brother took his place. He died without children, and... His books were very well respected. This is one Yismach Yisrael. V'no demashekotav ha'ari hakadosh midat hod hu keneged borei refuot. So all people who need a refuah this week should know that the idea of hod of Moshe is glowing. It's interesting. It's the mask that he puts on to cover it. So over here, it really is connected to refuah. V'ayom shehu midat hod shebahod, obviously referring to. To Lag BaOmer, who borei refuot, sheborei refuot. That is a way of having, you know, added healing upon healing. But I'll say it again. Moshe is the one who has this hod shebahod, because Moshe has this double crowns multiplied by all the people. Upirish inyan kamasha katuv hamech karim, shetov yoter, hayodea, sheenu yodea, meenu yodea, she'enu yodea. It's better to know that you don't know than not know that you don't know. That knowing that you don't know is already a higher level than those who don't know that they don't know. And those of you who are wondering, you know, why I went to Moshe lo yada, so the lo yada and the lo yada we have over here, him referring to the hod shebahod and the lo yada and the lo yada, which seems to me that he got what I'm thinking about. So you think it's totally random that I found this. Of course I found this, because that's exactly what I was looking for, the lo yada. Ki yodea shehu chole rachman litzlan, somebody who knows that they're sick, doresh al kopanom mizur varucha amun par litachloav, ulaze atzmo tzarech refua, vize borei refuot, sheborei refuot, sheborei lo refua, sheyada shenitrech le refua. So if you follow that, wonderful, but essentially that it's very good to know. Or if you don't know, at least know that you don't know. The Preet Tzaddik is, of course, Rabbi Tzaddik HaKohanim Lublin. Over here, the headline or the title says, Preet Tzaddik Lag BaOmer, right? V'siyum HaShas. So now you know where we're starting. We're starting by Lag BaOmer, but at least you know why we're starting by Lag BaOmer. And he says, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. So, of course, in Lag BaOmer, we will talk about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. The book which is said that he had offered is the Zohar, which is, again, a book of light. And now perhaps you understand why the light is connected to that as well, and that is the Hod Shebahod. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai haya tamid Rabbi Akiva, v'amar shenu midotai shemidotai trumot, and so on, midotai shem Rabbi Akiva, hanu shorish limudei Rabbi Akiva. V'yazeh belag ba'omer b'sfirat Hod Shebahod. The Hod hu midat Aharon HaKohen. And it's over here that, of course, he's correct, and we need to pause and to understand this properly. Because we just now hit what really is the key point of everything I'm going to say today, or still say today. If you paid attention to your Sefirot chart, and I'm sure everybody has a handy one or remembers them, and you have Chesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet, and Netzach, Hod, and so on. So Netzach is Moshe Rabbeinu. Hod is Aaron. So that's very strange, that this Hod Shebahod is Moshe, but Moshe's Netzach. Why is Moshe Netzach? Because Netzach is Torah. Torah is forever. Torah is eternal. So Moshe is the one who gives us Torah. Hod is glory, but it's the glory. I just want to add one more word to glory. It's the glory of tshuva. It's Aaron represents the korban. The korban represents the change in the individual from being somebody who stained with sin to become cleansed, and the soul now being purified. And Aaron was involved in the sin of the golden calf, but then after everything is healed, and him to become the Kohen, the one who has to constantly work on people being healed, Aaron therefore represents the Hod, and Moshe represents Netzach, and therefore it is quite strange what happened over here, that I had just told you that earlier that the glow in Moshe is Hod, and now Tosa told us this is the Hod Sheba Hod, and what's going on over here? That's not Moshe. Moshe is Netzach, so that's something that we need to pay attention to. So he continues, says the Hod is from Midat Aaron. The Sheva Ro'im Neged Sheva Midot. K'moshe Chashav B'Zohar Chadash Toldot. So Chesed is Avram, Gvur is Yitzchak, Yaakov is Teferet, Netzach is Moshe, Hod is Aaron, Yosef is Yesod, and David is Malchut. So what are we talking about? Va'aron shorish Torah sheba'al peh, k'mo shenemar, ki sifte kohen, right? The words, the lips of the kohen, v'torah yivakshu mipihu. Aaron, the kohen, represents Torah sheba'al peh, Torah mipihu. U'k'mo shenemar, v'hu yelecha lepeh. This, right, where we're told that Aaron will speak for you. Aaron is Torah sheba'al peh. So, what's happening? V'sfira tahod shebahod hu shorish Torah shebal peh. Right? So therefore, Rabbi Akiva's new students represent the dying of Rabbi Akiva's old students. The new students represent the hod shebahod. Rabbi Akiva is teaching the new students, passing on the Torah shebal peh to the new students. Kumo trumot mi datav she Rabbi Akiva uveyom histalkuto nikra hilula de Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai de kol Yisrael shebedero kiblu v'nikva b'libam az divrei Torah shelo. That the day that the Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai died, everybody accepted his Torah. Kumo shedor shebe midrash b'zman shebaleim nes. Those of you paying attention during the Sfira, it's on Pesach Sheni, Yud Dalet Adar, we start the week of Hod, and the week of Hod, so let's just pause there for a second. Pesach Sheni is a bizarre day. Normally we have a rule, of Rizmano Bato Korbano. You can't redo a Korban. There's no Moed Bet for a Korban. You miss a Korban, that's it. Pesach has a makeup date. How can I have a makeup date to it? So Pesach is part of tshuva. Pesach Sheni is part of fixing something that works on different rules. And that starts the week of Hod. The week of Hod are different rules than we had in other weeks. So when it comes to Pesach Sheni, that breaks the rules. Of course, the highlight of this week will be the Hod Sheba Hod, which will be on Lag BaOmer, and that will be the day that Rav Shimon bar Yochai dies. I will point out that the death of Shimon bar Yochai is not mentioned in any early sources. It's not mentioned in any place, and only do we find in much, much later sources past the Arizal, students moving forward, do we find any connection? The Chatam Sofer has a tshuva about Lag BaOmer. He has no idea what it is. Just has no idea. The Meiri mentions Lag BaOmer is the day the students stopped dying. That's the earliest reference to it, but it's been connected to Shimon bar Yochai. We don't find that till much later. Nonetheless, here we see a whole theology around it. The first Pesach goes by the normal rules, and the Pesach Sheni works by different rules. So again, it breaks the rules. You take sinners and turn them into holy people. That's Hod Sheba Hod. That's Aaron. That's bring people close Torah. Uv Rabbi Akiva sheyashorish Torah shebal peh. Rabbi Akiva, who's the greatest star of the Torah shebal peh, sheyadorish kitrei otiot. And Rabbi Akiva even understood the crowns on the letters. Now that just now became very interesting. Not because he wrote this, because he didn't connect it to what we noticed already. What did we notice? We noticed that the whole crowns have to do with the giving of the Torah themselves, and somehow those crowns got transformed, and the transformation of those crowns takes place in a Hod Sheba Hodness, if I can use such words. That Rabbi Akiva is connected to this Keter, he's connected to the crown, and the crown is the light, and Rabbi Akiva has this light, and we will stop at this, although you see there's more to explain over here. It also, down the line over here, will point out that Moshe Rabbeinu is Zayin Adar, and dies in Zayin Adar. Rabbi Akiva, we're told, is actually executed on Yom Kippur, which is also very interesting, because Yom Kippur is this day that Moshe comes down the second time, and that's the Hod Sheva Hod, and the light is over there, and the connection to Rabbi Akiva and Moshe Rabbeinu. The Imre Emet will tell us here along the way, this goes back to Gemara Megillah, it will tell us, we'll jump in really in the middle, and he's quoting his father, the Sfat Emet. It's going to be the differential between the Eitz HaChayim and the Eitz HaDat, which of course you have no idea what I'm talking about right now. So I will not go into any more of this, but I will. And he says, and what goes above, the last line, Mashu Lamalam and Asaga, hu Adilo Yada. That which we can't understand is the Adilo Yada. Source 22 is Rav Charlap. Rav Charlap was a student, maybe the most important student of Rav Kook, later on became the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Arav. Purim, hu yom hitgadlut pnimit ritzonam shel Yisrael. On Purim is the day that what's hidden becomes revealed. V'kol shana yichana l'Purim, and all year long is preparation for Purim. And all year things which are hidden, on Purim they get revealed. What's inside the soul on Purim comes on the outside of the body. And this higher level of what's inside gets revealed. And this is what happens from year to year. Things go from the internal to the external. And from a hidden place in hidden inside to only what's inside. That the whole thing is revealing things which are hidden. Hidden is, of course, things that we don't know. They're within us, but we don't always know them. And the most important aspect of that is because of a couple things that I want to explain further. It's really going to be 24 and 25, and they say the same thing, but again, let's go to 26 first, 25 and 26. Let's go to 26 first, because this is Rav Kook. And as I said, there's a relationship between Rav Charlap and Rav Kook. Ad lo yada, ad shiitale lamala min hadat. You get beyond understanding. Lamala mi chet eitz hadat. You get beyond the sin of the eitz hadat. Ad shiichzur l'dargam l'dargat adam harishon l'fnei chet eitz hadat. So we're told, haman min ha'etz, right? Haman is connected to hamin ha'etz. Haman goes back to the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Purim is a time of confusion. What happens in Adar is a time of total confusion. People feeling confused right now, you're still being affected by the story of Purim, or that could be a hangover. But the same thing has come across over here, this idea of going beyond the Eitz HaDat, the Eitz HaChayim. So now let's go back to the Sfat Emet in 25. Ita b'gmara, chayev adam l'fsumi b'puria ad lo yada. Shemati b'ze milin mipe kadosh mori v'ziknizal. La'alot ad l'mala me'etz hadat tovara. That one needs to climb beyond the confusion, the tree that confuses Eitz HaDat. And let's remember another thing, that is a tree of death, and that is a tree of confusion. Ve'eni zocha drim al burian. I don't remember exactly what was said. So maybe he heard this on Purim also, and he doesn't remember. Avonira, toref hadvirim. But this seems to be the essence of the matter. Dichtiv eitz gavor chamishim ama. Haman wanted to make a tree of 50 amot. Now, I want to pause for a second. Some of us perhaps have heard at some point this idea of 50 levels of binah, 50 levels of understanding. We're also told that somehow Am Yisrael fell to the 49th level of Tumah, and they would have stayed for one more moment, right? It's ready within a month of Pesach, we can talk about Pesach. They would have stayed one more moment, they would have disappeared. Some people write because of that, because they would have gotten to the 50th level of Tumah, and that would have been total non-existence. Many of the Kabbalists who write about this correct that point and say there is no 50th level of Tumah. Tumah only goes to 49. Which means generally in this world we have this idea of God created two sides of a coin. Free will dictates that there's always two sides. So therefore, whatever you have in holiness, you have within Tum'ah, within the opposite of holiness, except for one thing. You have absolute knowledge, absolute truth, God's knowledge, and that's the 50th level. There is no 50th level when it comes to the other side. The other side only goes down to 49. So now, Haman wanted to have a tree, gallows, of 50 amah. And Haman, of course, represents the Eitz HaDat Tov V'Ra. Again, the Gemara in Chulin asks, Haman min HaTorah minayin? I don't know, be a person like Haman, Haman min HaEitz. It quotes this tree, Haman HaEitz. Did you eat from this tree? It's the tree of knowledge and good and evil. So therefore, Haman is trying to create something having to do with Eitz HaDat Tov V'Ra. You day you eat it, will be, you'll die. He wants to kill Mordechai with this. So therefore, he wants to kill Mordechai with something which is connected to Tum'ah, with sin, with death, which goes 50 Amot. Now that you understand all of that, hopefully, we can continue reading. He says, "Avon editor of Dim Dichtiv Eitz Gavoa Chamishim Amah Vim Kol Madrigot Hashare Tum'ah Sheyesh Mem Tet Panim Tamei." Because there's only 49 levels of Tum'ah. Ki Koach Shel Amalek Nimtza B'Kol Madrigot. Amalek is within all of these levels. Aval Bemet Beemet Shar Hanun Shalak Tusha. When it comes to the 50 level of Tusha, Sham Lo Yesh Shnei Hadrachim. There are no two options by that 50th level. 50th level is something else. And I'll say it again. 50th level is Chayim. It's Eitz HaChayim. 50th level is only the positive, and there is no negative counterfeit on that level. Rakulotov. Kisham Shorish Ha'achdut. That's where Moshe lifts his hands. Moshe represents this knowledge that God gives and going up to the 50th level. And that's why Purim is a Kabbalat Torah as well, because it is the Kabbalat Torah, which is the Eitz Chaim, which eventually defeats Amalek, who can only get up to 49. Visham nikra de lo yada, and that's the point. De lo yada bein Aruham levarach Mordechai, because that's a point of not knowing the difference. Because at that point there is no difference anymore. She'ein sham shum achizal lesitra achreklal ki hu shoresh haachdut. So now, if you read that one line in Rav Kook again, ad lo yada ad shitale lamala min hadat lamala micheta eitz hadat ad shichzor ledargat adam rishon lefnei achet eitz hadat. Which means on Purim, ad lo yada, you know, part of knowing is knowing that you don't know, and knowing that you don't know is part of knowing, which is as we saw before, but let's try that a little bit clearer. We live in a world of confusion, but if you know that you live in a world of confusion, then you're ready, you have somewhat of a response to confusion. I'm fond of the story of Rabbi Nachman, where it says that one year the king and an advisor comes in and says that all the wheat has become tainted, and it's all going to cause a person to suffer from a hallucinogenic experience. So if we eat it, then we will all be suffering from, you know, psychotic episodes. If we don't eat it, then all the other people will be eating it, and they're going to suffer from psychotic episodes, and they're going to think that we're crazy. So he says to the king, you know, what should we do? And I do have other wheat put away that we can eat it. So the king says to the advisor, we'll eat what everyone else eats, but we need to put a sign on our foreheads. So therefore, when you look at me and I look at you, at least we'll know that we're crazy. We'll know that we don't know. We'll know that we're crazy. And I've understood that teaching to me, a sign on your heads is tefillin, which means that we're going to be, you know, an oath, right? Bein einecha, you're going to put tefillin on and we're going to look at one another. But it's also a keter. That exactly is what a keter is. That's exactly what the keter represents, is that, you know, we're going to have some kind of a keter to know that we don't know, to know that we're suffering in this world. So therefore, God gives us mitzvot in order to connect to the 50th level. But we walk around here knowing that we're in a place that we are suffering from confusion. And the point, you know, ad lo yada, you drink on Purim till you know that you don't know. Meaning, we all year around, we're in this complete clarity. But now I want to go back to Moshe Rabbeinu in the light, and Moshe lo yadaki karan par, right? Moshe had reached that level, and Am Yisrael only after he dies. recognize that they don't know either. So it's really interesting that that they only really get to this level when they realize that they don't have motion, then they realize that they don't know because they don't even know, you know, how to proceed when they sense this loss. But let me now explain what I think is taking place. When Moshe goes up the first time, he's there to bring the Torah down. Okay, Shar Nun, if you will, 50th level, wonderful. The people then make this golden calf, right? Ish, right? Lo yadanu. We don't know what happened to Ish, right? Moshe, lo yadanu. We don't know what happened. And they wanted to know. But they wanted to know from within this world, within those 49 levels, the knowledge which they achieved is not real knowledge. It's confusion. And they created this golden calf. Moshe then, and here's where we're going to get, not stuck, but here's where we're going to have two directions to go. It's possible that when Moshe actually carries the Luchot, we're told that was one opinion, but then we don't know why it's the second and not the first. When Moshe is writing something and then, you know, absentmindedly, so that's now going to be the Torah Shebe'al Peh aspect, which had floated away, which now Moshe is going to, it's going to be part of his personality. Okay, we understand that, hopefully. But this other opinion, which Rashi seemed to prefer, that it's going to be by the cleft of the rock, that Moshe is going to pass by, and something's going to happen, and God's glory is going to come upon him. What is Moshe doing during this time? I mean, actually, what's happening? The people sinned, and Moshe is the one who learns from God to say the following, Hashem, Hashem, Kerachem, Bochanan, Erech, Apayim, Rav Chesed, Be'emet, and so on. Moshe is the one who is the Shliach Tzibur, who is representing the people in order to try to achieve forgiveness. Moshe then climbs up, enters into this place of holiness, and comes down on Yom Kippur, or leaves on Yom Kippur, which means, even though normally Moshe's, the hat that he wears, as it were, was the hat of Torah, and that's Netzach, Moshe is functioning as the Kohen Gadol during this Yom Kippur, during the first Yom Kippur, when he's bringing the Torah down, trying to get forgiveness. I mean, what is it that happens by that cleft in the rock? God says, okay, I'm not going to be with the people. And Moshe says, no, you have to be within the people. You know, show me your glory. No, there needs to be a Shechina among us. There's not a Shekhinah among us, you know, so, you know, what is going to be with our spirituality? So God says, fine, I'm going to pass by. Moshe achieves that level of connectedness to God because during the time that he's praying to God to be with the people to fix the ramifications of the sin of the golden calf. God says, I can't be with you. You people are going to sin, and what's going to happen? No, we need the Shekhinah with us, within our community, and therefore Moshe is now functioning as the Kohen Gadol. So just think of it like this. When Moshe comes down from the mountain and he's glowing, why is he glowing? So I just want to read to you a piyut that we all know. I won't sing it. My friend Rabbi Joel Portnoy was the soloist on this. You can go look this up and look on YouTube, look for the tune. Emet ma nehedar, haya kohen gadol b'tzeito mibeit kodesh ha-koshim b'shalom b'li pega. Uvechen ma nehedar ya kohen gadol b'tzeito b'shalom min ha-kodesh. Kivrakim meyotzim miziv ha-chayot. Mar Ekohen. Kigodo Gidilim Barbak Tzvot, Mar Ekohen. Kidmuta Keshe Petoch Anan, Mar Ekohen. Kehod Asher Hilbish Tzur, Li Tzur. And that is such an interesting turn of phrase. Like the Hod, which the Creator created on his creations, but of course, what name of God did it use in that turn of phrase? Tzur. Where is it that Moshe gets this Hod from? He gets it when he passes by the Tzur, which means the Mar'eh Kohen, how wondrous was what the Kohen Gadol looked like when he left. The Kohen Gadol glowed because he brought about tshuva of the people. So now you realize the phrase in Aramaic, if we're doing Kabbalistic terms, you have to use the Aramaic, is the Zir Anpin, it's the microcosm. The Zir Anpin of what the Kohen Gadol experiences when he leaves the Holy of Holies is the glow on Moshe's face when he brought about forgiveness to the entire Jewish people. Which means, of course, it's Hod in this case. It's not just Moshe physically bringing the Torah down. It's Moshe bringing the Torah down to a people who have sinned. The bringing of the Torah down is that Moshe is not just functioning as Netzach, that Moshe is also functioning as Hod. Not just as Hod. This is Hod Sheba Hod. I mean, the whole people could have been wiped out, but Moshe is bringing down the Torah at this point. So therefore, the Hod Sheba Hod of all of the crowns and all of... So it's interesting, the crowns then go on the letters and the crowns go on Moshe, and Moshe's personality becomes transformed, and Moshe is the Kohen Gadol at this point. So it's so interesting that that's exactly what the piyut, I mean the last one, Kiroa Zrichat HaShemesh Al Aretz Mara Kohen. What did the Kohen look like? He looked like the very glow of the sun, he looked like the Hod, he looked like the lightning, all of these elements of you know, incredible light. That's what the Kohen looked like. So, but of course that's what the Kohen looked like, because that's what Moshe looked like when Moshe came down, and that's what they're looking at. What happened to Moshe? Well, the answer is Moshe brought about forgiveness for the Jewish people at that point. He brought the Torah down despite everything. Of course it's the second Luchot. The first Luchot is just receiving the Torah. The second Luchot is receiving the Torah to a people who had sinned, to bring about forgiveness to the people, and therefore on Yom Kippur is the day the second Luchot, but that's not the same as the first Luchot. Accepting the Torah as a Baal Tshuva is not the same thing as being given the Torah, you know, in a completely pure sense. This is not the Torah that we learn in utero. This is the Torah that we learn after we've made mistakes along the way, and therefore that's the glow that took place, and that's the Hod Shebahod, and that's the Keter, and that's the crowns, and that's what the Kohen Gadol looks like, and of course, therefore, that's what Moshe looked like as well.